I'm Morris Wee. I'm a parish pastor in Northfield, Minnesota. This is one of a series of sessions on the story of Joseph, Genesis 37 to 50. And today we'll be looking at chapters 42 and 43. Do any of you have trouble hearing in here and would appreciate some sound enhancement device? Do we have them? If you'd like that. And also, if you have trouble hearing any of us, just kind of raise your hand and say, speak up. During the course of the five sessions this week, we're reading through the whole story. I'll review briefly what's happened the first 2 days and remind you tomorrow is different. Tomorrow is going to be a text study for the texts for Sunday. And then Friday and Saturday will be the last two sessions on Joseph. If please interrupt with your comments or your questions as we go along. Let's open with prayer. Gracious God, we thank you for this gorgeous day and for once again bringing us together to hear your word. We trust that this is a living word for us, that it confronts us, leads us, guides us, inspires us. Let today be a day when we sense your presence in these words and your guidance and your teaching in this scripture. Thank you for the opportunity again to hear your word in Christ's name. Amen. A quick review of what went on in the last 2 days' studies. Chapter 37 of Genesis tells the story of the treachery of Joseph's brothers. Joseph is the favored son. He's the child of Jacob's old age, a favorite of his father. He's given this long coat with sleeves, which means he can't work with his brothers. He's obviously the favorite. He has these dreams, which he quickly tells his brothers about, that they're going to bow down before him. They hate him. They hate him for his father's favoritism. They hate him for his dreams and for his willingness to tell them about his dreams, and so they conspire to kill him one day. And Reuben and Judah are the two brothers who suggest, well, let's not kill him. It's not good to kill our own flesh and blood. Reuben says, let's throw him in the pit, which they do. He intends to come back and get him later, but meanwhile Judah says, let's sell him to these people and make a profit. Yeah, that's what it says, yeah. Reuben planned to rescue him after he talked the brothers into throwing him in the pit. Yeah, but when he came back, he had been already sold into Egypt. So then Reuben tears his garments and says, what am I going to do? So there were the two brothers who preferred not to kill him. Neither one of them said, was able to talk the other brothers out of doing any violence to him. So they compromised, I guess you could say they compromised, they sold him into slavery. That's at the end then, Reuben and his father tear their garments and lament that this has happened, and that's the central image for me of that first chapter, the tearing of the family. What happens next, chapter 38, is an interlude that develops the character of Judah. It's the story of Judah and Tamar. If you're around next week, we'll be looking at that story next week. Judah is doesn't act responsibly toward Tamar, and so she tricks him into taking the responsibilities he should for her. And he recognizes he's done wrong. So there's a certain amount of character movement for Judah in that chapter. The following chapter, we're back to Joseph in Egypt. And Joseph prospers in Egypt because the Lord is with him. He's working for Potiphar. Everything goes well. He gets all the responsibility of Potiphar's household and the favor of Potiphar. And then Potiphar's wife is interested in sleeping with him and tries to seduce him, and he fends her off righteously and she is angry about this, rips his garment off one day and uses it to prove that he has attacked her, so he's thrown into prison. That's the at the end of chapter 39. He again prospers in prison, and the jailer gives him responsibility over everything in the prison, and things are going fine, as well as they can when you're in prison in Egypt and your home is back in Israel someplace. Couple of the king's servants, the baker and the cupbearer, are in prison. They have dreams. Joseph interprets the dreams correctly. This is what happens, the way he has predicted what will happen to them. And he says to the chief cupbearer, remember me when you're back in Pharaoh's favor. He forgets him. But Pharaoh has a dream, the famous dream of the seven fat and skinny cows, the seven full and dried up ears of corn. And then the cupbearer remembers Joseph. They call Joseph from prison. He interprets the dream for Pharaoh. And furthermore, offers some advice. Since it's going to go this way, I suggest you save up grain. And Pharaoh says, fine, you be in charge of it. And again, Joseph is put in charge of everything. And at the end of that segment, the whole world suffering from famine is coming to Joseph and to Egypt to receive grain. Now we're up to the beginning of chapter 43. And as we read it, I'd like you to think about what's going on, 42, I'm sorry. What's going on emotionally for Joseph in this section?
When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons,
why do you look at one another?
And he said,
behold, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there, that we may live and not die.
So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might befall him. Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land. He it was who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brother came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers and knew them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them.
Where do you come from?
He said. They said,
from the land of Canaan to buy food.
Thus Joseph knew his brothers, but they did not know him. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed of them, and he said to them,
you are spies. You have come to see the weakness of the land.
They said to him,
no, my lord, your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies.
He said to them,
no, it is the weakness of the land that you have come to see.
And they said,
we, your servants, are 12 brothers, the sons of a certain man in the land of Canaan. The youngest, however, is now with our father, and one is no more.
But Joseph said to them,
it is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place until your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you, and let him bring your brother, while you remain in prison, that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you. Or else, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies.
And he put them all together in prison for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them,
do this, and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined in your prison. And let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your household. And bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified, and you shall not die.
And they did so. Then they said to one another,
alas, we are paying the penalty for what we did to our brother. We saw his anguish when he pleaded with us, but we would not listen. That is why this anguish has come upon us.
And Reuben answered them,
did I not tell you not to sin against him? But you would not listen, so now there comes a reckoning for his blood.
They did not know that Joseph understood them, for there was an interpreter between them. Then he turned away from them and wept. And he returned to them and spoke to them. And he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. And Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, and to replace every man's money in his sack, and to give him provisions for the journey. This was done for them. Then they loaded their asses with their grain and departed. And as one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender at the lodging place, he saw his money in the mouth of his sack. And he said to his brothers,
"My money has been put back. Here it is in the mouth of my sack."
At this, their hearts failed them, and they turned trembling to one another, saying,
"What is this that God has done to us?"
When they came to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had befallen them, saying,
"The man, the lord of the land, spoke harshly to us and charged us with spying on the land. But we said to him, 'We are honest men, we are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is now with our father in the land of Canaan.' Then the man, the lord of the land, said to us, 'By this I shall know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me. Take grain for the famine of your household, and go your way. Bring your youngest brother to me, and I shall know that you are not spies, but honest men. Then I will release your brother to you, and you may trade in the land.'"
As they emptied their sacks, behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were dismayed. And Jacob their father said to them,
"You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and now you would take Benjamin. All this has come upon me."
Then Reuben said to his father,
"Slay my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you."
But he said,
"My son shall not go down with you, as his brother is dead, and he only is left. If harm should befall him on the journey that you are to make, you would bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol."
Now the famine was severe in the land, and when they had eaten the grain which they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them,
"Go again, buy us a little food."
But Judah said to him,
"The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you will send your brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'"
Israel said,
"Why did you treat me so ill as to tell the man that you had another brother?"
They replied,
"The man questioned us carefully about ourselves and our kindred, saying, 'Is your father still alive? Have you another brother?' What we told him was in answer to these questions. Could we in any way know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down?'"
And Judah said to Israel, his father,
"Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. I will be surety for him. Of my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. For if we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice."
Then their father Israel said to them,
"If it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags, and carry down to the man a present, a little balm, and a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Take double the money with you. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take also your brother and arise and go to the man. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, that he may send back your brother and Benjamin. If I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved."
So the men took the present, and they took double the money with them and Benjamin. And they arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house,
Joseph.
Bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready.
for the men are to dine with me at noon.
The man did as Joseph bade him, and brought the men to Joseph's house. And the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said,
"It is because of the money we placed in our sacks the first time that we have been brought in, so that he may have an opportunity to fall upon us, to make slaves of us, and take our donkeys."
So they went up to the steward of Joseph's house, and spoke with him at the door of the house, and said,
"Oh, my lord, we came down the first time to buy food, and when we came to the lodging place, we opened our sacks, and there was each one's money in the top of his sack, our money in full weight. So we have brought it back with us. Moreover, we have brought down with us additional money to buy food. We do not know who put our money in our sacks."
He replied,
"Steward, rest assured, do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father must have put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money."
Then he brought Simeon out to them. And when the man had brought the men into Joseph's house and given them water, and they had washed their feet, and when he had given their asses provender, they made ready the present for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that they should eat bread there. When Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present which they had with them, and bowed down to him to the ground. And he inquired about their welfare, and said,
"Is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive?"
They said,
"Your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive."
And they bowed their heads and made obeisance. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said,
"Is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son."
Then Joseph made haste, for his heart yearned for his brother, and he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out, and controlling himself, he said,
"Let food be served."
They served him by himself, and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians might not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in amazement. Portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. So they drank and were merry with him.
Okay, thank you. This story continues into the next two chapters, and I think I failed to say at the outset that of the portions we're doing, this is the hardest part to divide up. I feel like the next two chapters, they're a continuation of this testing. So if you're not able to be here on Friday morning, not tomorrow morning, but Friday morning when we look at the next two chapters, by all means read them. They'll make sense to you. It'll be a continuation of this kind of testing that Joseph is putting the brothers through. And first off, I want to just summarize that to make sure this mysterious stuff that Joseph is doing is relatively clear to all of us. What Joseph has done is when he sees his brothers arrive in Egypt, he doesn't acknowledge that he recognizes them and they don't recognize him. He comes up with an excuse for throwing them in jail, saying they're spies. Then he makes a deal. He says, "I'll give you grain if you bring me your youngest brother, Benjamin." Though, you know, there's no real logic to this. He says, "This will prove that you're telling me the truth." But he wants to see how they treat Benjamin. Why Benjamin? You remember?
His favorite. He was one of Jacob's favored wife was his younger one.
Right, yeah.
And both of the younger ones favored.
Right. Joseph and Benjamin were the two sons of Rachel. And they are the ones that their father favored. Joseph was essentially killed by his brothers because his father favored him so much. And he wants to see now how these brothers are going to treat Benjamin. before, you know, he's willing to send them with food. He sends them with food, but he doesn't want to reveal himself to them. And he wants to put them through something before he does that. So he requires that they bring Benjamin back. And in order to make sure that they do, presumably, I think, so that he can see how they treat Benjamin, he hangs on to Simeon. Well, they go back, and their father won't let them take Benjamin. And so they just leave Simeon rotting in the jail down there until later. And finally, they talk Judah into Jacob into letting them bring Benjamin, and they go back. And still, Joseph does not reveal himself to them, but invites them to his house. And when they get there, he seats them at the table all in the proper order of their birth or their age, which is further mystery to them, a lot of mysteries for the brothers that Joseph seems to be enjoying. And then he serves Benjamin food five times. Now, they've been starving. That's why they're there. They've been suffering from famine 6 months or a year longer than they wanted to suffer from it because their father wouldn't let them come down there. And they get down there, and food is important to them. And Joseph serves Benjamin five times as much.
It's interesting, you brought up this point. How long did Jacob delay this because he didn't want to send Benjamin? Do you have any idea how long this delay was?
No, I just guessed.
Well, he did somewhere, I heard, that they could have made two trips during the time that he was making up his mind.
That's right. Yeah, we could have gone twice in this amount of time. So, a couple of months at least, don't you suppose? Yeah. Past the point when they knew they wanted very much to go.
Simeon.
Well, more than that, no, that's right. That's the request to go is right away when they get back, and then they wait a period of time. Yeah, but they wait until they're so hungry again that Jacob is asking them to go and get more food. So the gist of what Joseph is manipulating here is clear enough. Now there's going to be more of that in the next two chapters, and finally he will reveal himself to his brothers, and then there's some stuff that follows that. But for the moment, he's engaged in this kind of a trial process, and so let's look at some details here, starting at the beginning of chapter 42. The first thing here is a kind of a mystery to me. The first thing that we read, Jacob says, "Why do you keep looking at one another?" to the brothers. Now, I'm not sure what that means. I picture them not having enough food. There's no place for their sheep to feed. And maybe all their sheep have died. I don't know. They don't know what to do. They're kind of sitting around the living room, twiddling their thumbs. This is my image. And the father says, why are you just sitting around looking at one another? There, any other ways? Do you have some sense of what he means here? Why are you...
Well, I guess it's kind of like what you had said, except maybe in a bigger context, as far as... you know, you look to someone for assistance. You look to, some people look to the state for aid or something. Mm. And why are you looking at one another, you know, looking to them mm-hmm. for some type of solution? Mm.
Maybe calling on who's going to take the initiative here and
yeah.
do something about this. Yeah.
It could be, why are you looking at each other? Why aren't you looking at me?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Because mm-hmm. I'm the head of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says, why are you looking at one another? And then he tells them what to do.
Yeah.
Well, it's a long time from when they put Joseph in the pit. But when kids do something wrong, they do an awful lot of looking at each other and
right.
wondering if somebody's going to
mm-hmm.
notice it.
Yeah.
And when they really got into trouble in Egypt, they talked among themselves and said, we're in trouble because of what we did to Joseph.
Right.
Well, they're in real trouble here now, too. So it's possible they're wondering if
they're wondering, even at that point, if this has been, this difficulty is the result of their evil they've done. Yeah,
okay,
that's
it's
very interesting.
14 years, just 14 years. The deal they bought 14 years ago since they sold them.
No, I calculated about 23. The 13 that he was in prison in Egypt, then the 7 good years.
Oh, I see.
He was in prison for 13 years.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, sure. Then the 7 good years,
so
and then however many bad years
it
took before they were looking for food. So over 20, certainly.
I was wondering if there was something incapacitating about famine. Also,
yeah.
When famine moves in, it was severe over all the earth.
Yeah.
That just incapacitated this group,
yeah.
This family, to look beyond itself.
Yeah.
That they had to keep what was theirs, and maybe famine does that.
Yeah.
That it just incapacitates kind of sort of a rational system.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go down to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't see that.
Yeah.
Famine had just incapacitated.
Right. Yeah, that's all right. That's, well, all of these are good possibilities for something. Things are wrong. You know, something is wrong. They're not solving the problem here. But the father comes up, as you say, the father comes up then with the plan. Let's go down to Egypt. And so down they go. But, verse 4, Jacob did not send, who is this? Joseph's brother, Benjamin. You notice how we looked at the words for family relationships. Not just Benjamin or the youngest Benjamin, but Joseph's brother, Benjamin. For he feared that harm might come to him. Why would he fear that harm might come to him?
Well, he's not trusting his sons.
Yeah. He's going with 10. He's got the company.
He's running out of favors.
Yeah.
It was pretty hot.
Yeah, does he? Are you suggesting he might even suspect that they did Joseph in?
Yeah.
They came back with an excuse that he bought. Must have been killed by a wild animal. But maybe he never was real sure that that's what happened. He doesn't trust that Benjamin, who's a grown man by this time, is safe in the presence of 10 other grown men. He's not worried about any of the others of them, just worried about Benjamin. This favoritism continues and might be, in fact, annoying to the other brothers.
He would have a trust. One of those older brothers that he could have trusted, it would seem that he would find one of them. They had to come forth and sort of beg him, try to assure him that they could trust him living in Judah,
mm-hmm.
that they could trust him to do this.
Yeah, it wasn't up to Benjamin, though, to make the decision. And Jacob is afraid to lose him. And he doesn't trust his own other sons to take care of him. And it feels as though he suspects that they did Joseph in, and they might.
Well, in another Bible, another interpretation, it does give that. I read another version, the Gideon version, last evening.
Mm-hmm.
And it did suggest that also in words that suggested it more strongly than mm-hmm. this version does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, a daily thing that's not in what's not written in the Bible of their family and how they, their living situation, how they dealt with one another, probably didn't trust them.
Benjamin's choice for Benjamin is to have him die of starvation in the famine. You know, he would rather, that emphasizes how much he distrusts the brothers.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a chance of life and food in Egypt, but he'd rather have Benjamin face famine than his brothers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Especially the second time.
Yeah.
This first time, the assumption is that the 10 will be able to bring back food. And so Benjamin won't die. Second time, when they can't get the food without Benjamin, he's still not willing to send it. They get down there, Joseph recognizes them, and they bow down before him, and he remembers the dream. And we remember the dream. But he decides not to reveal himself to them, instead accuses them of being spies. 4 times in a row, he says, "You are spies." Now, anytime things repeated that much, I think, why is this repeated so much? And I'm not sure I've got an answer. The obvious thing, of course, is this gives them an excuse. They're foreigners. It gives them an excuse to put them in prison and carry on with his scheme, and even to take a little time thinking about what he's going to do. He needs a little time, 3 days, to think this out. But I was reminded of the very first thing we saw in the story about Joseph's relationship with his brothers, that he brought back a bad report of them to his father. And the second thing that happened was that his father sent him out to check on them. And maybe they thought of him as a spy and called him a spy. And it's just one of the ways he twists the knife here.
I just think it shows how really human he was. And this is delicious. He's in such a marvelous position of power. Mm-hmm. And he is a human being. And he is kind of angry about what happened.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I'm going to ask you to discuss in small groups is that what's going on for Joseph here? Is it entirely that he's just enjoying the power he's got over his brothers? Are there other things that he's interested in assessing before he reconciles himself to them? Clearly, he's interested in seeing how they treat Benjamin. And we'll see.
Well, we know that he's forgiven them. From what he named his daughter, that he's forgetting the past. We know that he has forgiven them.
Well, I don't know if I would say that God has let me forget my father's house is the same as saying I forgive them what they did to me. Oh. Forgetting them is more like shutting them off.
The word was forgetting, not
it was
forgetting.
It was forgetting.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So, all
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Okay. Puts them in jail. Interesting what they say to him. I find this very interesting. The first thing they say when they describe themselves, we are 12 brothers. It's been over 20 years since they sent Joseph off, presumably to his death or disappearance. And when he asks them about their family, they say we're 12 brothers. It reminds me of a famous little poem by William Wordsworth called We Are Seven. Some of you may remember this from some freshman English class, but it's about a little girl who's asked to talk about her family, and there are six of them there, and she insists that we are seven because she's remembering the child that died that's out in the churchyard, and this struck the poet and wrote a lovely little poem about it. But that's how they are too. 23 maybe years later, we're 12 brothers. They thought they could get rid of him. You know, they hated him so much. But he never went away for them. It didn't work. At any rate, that's how they start out. And then Joseph says, well, here's the deal. One of you has to stay in prison to prove to me that you're telling the truth and you bring Benjamin back. And their reaction to that is, immediately, we're paying the penalty for what we did to our brother. That's verse 21. Right away, they think. This is about our brother. And as one of you suggested, maybe that's even what they thought about the famine as they were looking at each other around the room. But they haven't been able to forget or get Joseph out of their life. And they remember his anguish when he pleaded with us, which incidentally we didn't see in the story earlier, but they tell us about it now.
Well, but there's another point there. You know, it isn't very nice either for parents to have favorites like that.
To have
a favorite.
Right, yeah.
I mean, that isn't so nice either. I mean, that is really not a holy thing either when a parent picks out one or two children and favors them above the others.
Absolutely. That was one of the root problems here.
And it does cause conflicts in families.
Yeah, yeah. And well, that's absolutely true. So Reuben, remember Reuben was the one who first said, let's not kill him. Verse 22, Reuben answered them, I told you so.
Yeah. I'm not part of this. I'm the best.
And then he says, now there comes a reckoning for his blood. Now they thought, their argument, both Reuben and Judah's argument for not killing him was, we can't shed his blood. We can't shed the blood of our family. And they convinced themselves at that moment that they weren't shedding his blood and therefore weren't doing the ultimate kind of evil. But 23 years later, when they, when their guilt hits them again, and they, they've been carrying all this time, right away, it's his, they know they killed him. It's a reckoning for his blood. They couldn't deceive themselves about that. They couldn't ship him out of their family either. And Joseph, hearing this, turns and weeps. Joseph has one reaction in this story. He weeps. Reminds me a little bit of a bad actor who only has one emotion that they can demonstrate. We have to kind of guess what it means. Goldie Hawn, for instance. Maybe you have your favorites. I shouldn't step on toes. But this is one of the, we talked about this the other day, the feature of the biblical narrative that doesn't tell us all the internal workings of the character. We see that Joseph weeps, and in a minute I'm going to give you time to talk about what we think that weeping means. Let me just see if there are other important things I want to mention. Verse 28. They find the money in the sack. Another piece of the test, putting the money back in the sacks. Why would Joseph put the money back in the sacks?
Scare them.
Why would it scare them?
Alarm them. Well, because then they could be accused of thieving.
Yeah, and it does scare them. That's exactly what they worry about, that they're going to be framed. Here, they've been set up. They see something's already wrong when he's accused them of being spies. Maybe he's framing them.
I think he loves them, and he loves his father, obviously. And I think he's putting him through this awful test, but I think he loves
yeah.
them.
And he wants them to have the money, you mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's another possible reading of this.
It gets a double connection. He keeps the connection. He's going to make sure they're going to.
Yeah.
He's taking all angles.
Yeah, right. It's another way of making him nervous and maybe sure they come back.
Also, I'm just thinking of this, not really game he's playing, but this scenario that he's playing must have caused a lot of stress and tension of him. In him. And,
right.
And that the tears might be a release that, oh my gosh, maybe he was guided to do this, but you know, how long can you keep that up?
Right.
And maybe he just, those tears would be such a relief.
Right, yeah. The money, the issue of the money, I think is, it brings to mind that they sold him for money. One of the arguments that was made when they sold him was, what profit is there in merely killing him? Let's make some money on him. And it may be testing whether they're going to be dishonest with regard to money this time, because he's putting them to the test in a number of ways here. But there may be other ways of reading that. Somebody in the other group said they sold him for money. He's not going to take money from his own family the way they did. He's going to give them the grain. Because they're family. Well, and that's your idea of his generosity to them. Their anxiety when they see this money, the way they respond is interesting. What is this that God has done to us? We talked the other day about how much of the things that happened to Joseph we attribute to God. Joseph says, God gives me the dreams, God is with me, and so on. This seems, the money in the sack seems pretty clearly a decision of Joseph's. It's attributed to God by them, by the brothers. Later on, when they come back to the steward, they say, this money was in our sacks. The steward said, God must have put the money in your sacks. Just an interesting further point to that question of how much, when a person does something, how much of it do we attribute to God? How much of it is appropriately attributed to God of what Joseph does?
This is the first time too that the brothers have talked about God. I think I was going back and they talked about other things, or father saying this is the penalty, but they never attributed anything to God until this moment that I could find.
The money in the sack, very interesting. But having connected certainly to their guilt and their sense of having done wrong. Yeah. Thank you. The other thing that maybe isn't necessary to talk about is the character of Jacob in here. So self-oriented. I am the one you have bereaved of children, he says, when they come back without Simeon. Accusing them also of bereaving him of Joseph. Maybe he's getting more explicit here about sensing that Joseph is no more, Simeon is no more. Now you would take Benjamin. All this has happened to me. And then later on he says, why did you treat me so badly as to tell the man you had another brother?
But sometimes when you have arguments with your spouse, don't you say dumb things like that?
Yeah, right. I mean, but they are... I don't. Maybe you do. And that just reinforces the sense for me, that Jacob has a problematic relationship with his sons and is not very helpful here, and he refuses to let them go back with Benjamin and finally relents when they're starving. So,
I wonder how Simeon felt back there.
Yeah, there's Simeon rotting away in jail. Okay, let's...
That's the trap of parenthood, though, isn't it? That what happens to my child happens to me. Mm. I mean, in current lingo, we talk about who owns the problem. You know, does the child own the problem or does the parent? But there's always this trap that if something happens to your child that you take
somehow,
him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's an unfortunate pattern. I agree with you that he's being self-centered, but I think it's very human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone hurt my child, they hurt me.
Yeah, yeah. And he blames it on the brothers. I think there is some suggestion of real problems between the father and these sons of his. At any rate, I would like you to take a little time in groups of three discussing the character of Joseph, why he weeps, what's going on when he weeps, and why he's withholding his identity from his brothers. And we see a combination of things in him. There's some clear being moved at the presence of his brothers and of Benjamin, but distancing himself so that he can manipulate things. How do you read that? Do you like it? Do you not like it? And why? What things are going on for him? There's no easy answer, but let's work on that for a little bit. Yeah. It's one of the fascinating things about this story is that it's full of such of the experiences that we all know in our own families. And as we said that first day, we felt like these are real experiences. They're not artificial. Well, I think somebody beat me to that. It's time for us to go. I want to say at the end here, as we've noted a number of times, these are the kinds of human dynamics that we experience ourselves. And sometimes we experience divisions in families that feel irreconcilable. They feel so big. They extend for 20 years. They include real violence and terrible things. And what we see in this story is, again, the potential for reconciliation. Not easy reconciliation, but it's always out there. There's a possibility that God can work reconciliation, even in the worst and most brutal and violent of divisions, even within the hardest places, which are families. See you in a couple days.